In his new book, The End of Loyalty, journalist Rick Wartzman chronicles the erosion of the relationship between American companies and their workers through the stories of four major employers, General Motors, General Electric, Kodak, and Coca-Cola. He shows how big businesses once took responsibility for providing their workers and retirees with an array of social benefits. But the corporate social contract didn't last. By tracing the ups and downs of these four corporate icons over 70 years, Wartzman illustrates just how much has been lost. Rick Wartzman is the director of the K.H. Moon Center for a Functioning Society at the Drucker Institute, a part of Claremont Graduate University. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Rick Wartzman to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
What brought you to want to look at the state of good jobs in this country?
Well, I've been a journalist for a long time. I was at the Wall Street Journal for 15 years and then business editor at the LA Times after that, and then in my work at the Drucker Institute. I've been around long enough. I guess that means I'm old now. I've been around long enough to, I've really seen this tremendous shift in the corporate landscape, in the way that workers are treated, the way they're looked at by employers by and large. And I write narrative history and really just felt like a story that I wanted to tell.
Ultimately, when you look at this rise and fall, where are we right now?
Well, we're in a pretty bad place all in all, at least for, a huge portion of the American population. So there are a number of forces that have led us to this point. I tell my story through the lens of four giant companies: General Electric, General Motors, Kodak, and Coca-Cola. And I tell the story from the end of World War II until now. And, there's a lot of intricacies to the story, but these companies really are representative of a much bigger corporate landscape and all kinds of forces that have come to bear down really over the last 30, 40 years. So increases in automation, in globalization and trade that have certainly hurt some communities very hard, the decline of unions, the fracturing of jobs into temp work and gig jobs, the shift, really important, from a manufacturing economy in many ways to a knowledge society, where if you have education and skills, you can grab a good job still, and most people who have good education and skills can still do that and often prosper. But those without higher education or any kind of post-secondary education without skills are really suffering, and those folks who once had a path to the middle class are being left behind. And then finally, all of this has been amplified by a shift over the last 30 years or so, where companies have really come to want to maximize shareholder value above all else. They've really explicitly placed shareholders at kind of the top of the pecking order, and workers have definitely suffered as a result.
Of those four companies, General Motors, General Electric, Kodak, and Coca-Cola, how much is their story, are there commonalities in the story, and how much do you see very stark differences in their approaches?
Right. So, historically, they have been very different in their approach to labor. So you had a company like Kodak, for example, which was a practitioner of what scholars call welfare capitalism. So they lavished good pay and perks on their workers, in part as a way to actually ward off union organizers. And Kodak was never organized by labor. You have others, particularly General Motors, right, where the United Auto Workers have had a huge influence over their history and, arguably were able to negotiate so much in terms of pay and benefits, particularly health and retirement security, that ultimately it added to General Motors being in an uncompetitive position. Certainly a lot of missteps by the company itself in terms of the quality of products it made over time, but you could argue that the union had almost a hand in the company's becoming less competitive. General Electric and Coca-Cola, different stories there. But I think what's really striking in the end, you've had two companies in General Electric and Coke that by and large have been very successful over a very long period of time. They have continued to grow and prosper over decades and decades and decades, really the entire run of this narrative arc that I cover from the end of World War II until now. Some ups and downs, to be sure, but truly successful companies. You've had two strugglers in General Motors and Kodak, right? Both went bankrupt. And Kodak is really now just a shadow of itself. In many ways, GM is too, of where it had been historically. And yet, for their workers, they all come out to the same place. They have had eroding job security. They've had stagnant pay, particularly, you know, for frontline workers, in recent years. They've had eroding health benefits. They've had eroding pension benefits, retirement security. And so whether you're a company that has succeeded or has struggled, for their workers, the story's pretty much the same.
I think that is really the interesting thing about the book, of the commonalities in those stories. One of the things that I took away from the book, too, is the lessons that are to be learned, but one company doesn't really tend to learn a lesson from another company, do they?
Well, you know, I guess the lessons, you know, learned, unfortunately, I think companies tend to sometimes, and chief executives and boards run kind of in there's a pack mentality. They run as a herd. And so if, you know, there's any lesson I think they've sort of learned from each other, it's again, this idea that it's really permeated corporate culture, that shareholders rank above everyone else and that their obligation, some even factually misstated as a fiduciary duty, is to maximize shareholder value. And there is nothing in corporate law that makes it so. And, you know, this has been a really pernicious development in my mind. It's something that's been very, very harmful to workers and to society at large. It used to be that companies had much more of a stakeholder view of the world and a much more of a long-term orientation. They were able to look out and not just be driven by short-term financial results, quarterly earnings, even daily share price that drives so many decisions today.
So are there companies now that mirror in any way these four companies and what they were doing in the 50s, 60s, and even the turbulence through the turbulence of the 70s and 80s?
Yeah, it's a great question. And in fact, you know, there are some so-called high road companies that really have a different business model. A good example, I think, is Costco. Which, you know, many see as the anti-Walmart in some ways, at least in terms of how it treats its labor. And I've had the privilege and pleasure of getting to know Jim Sinegal over the years, their longtime CEO. And he's the real deal. He cares about his people. They invest in their people. They pay, certainly for the retail industry, you know, relatively well, and they give good benefits. And they see that kind of basic compensation is a really important part to driving worker satisfaction that in turn leads to higher customer satisfaction. So that's their business model, and they've been hugely successful. In fact, their stock over the years has greatly outperformed Walmart's. So you could argue, even from a shareholder's perspective, that's the model you should be going with. Another really great company that I admire the CEO tremendously is actually one not based in the U.S., although they have a lot of brands that you would know here, and that's Unilever, the consumer products
sure.
giant. And Paul Polman really has just an incredible long-term orientation. They treat their people well. They treat the planet well. They're not perfect by any means. No company that size could be, but they are continuously trying to improve the way that treat their workers and value their workers. And so there are models out there to look at, but unfortunately, we know from the broader economic data that those are the exception.
The End of Loyalty is the title of the book, and that, of course, I guess means not only the loyalty that a company has to a worker, but also that we as consumers have to a company too, right?
Well, I think so. I mean, you could probably some branding experts who would know more than I do. And, I do sense that you know, people do lock in. They tend to lock into certain brands and favorites and tend to stay there for a while. You know, I think the research would show. But, you know, one thing I think that people who care about this issue, who care about the way companies treat their workers, we can act as consumers, and we have some power. So there are tools that increasingly allow us to take a peek into how a company treats its workers, things like Glassdoor and PayScale, these online databases where workers are going and sharing what the experience is like inside the company, and that aggregates data about that. There's a bank called Aspiration, an online bank, and they can tell you based on where you shop through your online bill paying and your debit card at merchants you might buy things from, how do those companies stack up in terms of the way they treat the planet and the way they treat their people? And you can go on their app and actually see, hey, do I want to put my dollars into this merchant, or would I be better off shopping somewhere else that more closely aligns with my personal values? So I think there are things we can do as consumers to actually help maybe nudge companies a little bit back in a direction we'd like them to go.
The name of the book is The End of Loyalty, The Rise and Fall of Good Jobs in America. Rick Wortsman, I thank you very much for spending time with us this morning. A great pleasure having you on the program.
Hey, thank you so much. I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, The End of Loyalty by Rick Wortsman. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.